I have a question for you. Have you ever been in a desperate financial situation? How did you feel? Where did you find God in the midst of your worries? How did you pray? What did you do? How did your situation resolve or not? Have you ever depended on charity? On what charity did you depend? For how long? How was that charity provided? How did you relate to the people or organisation that helped you? How did they relate to you? Did you feel respected? Or did you feel small, diminished somehow? Have you ever been offered charity that you neither needed nor wanted? What were the circumstances? Why did someone think it appropriate to offer you charity? How did they offer it? How did you feel? This morning's gospel reading urges those listening to Jesus to help others humbly, not drawing attention to themselves or expecting to be thanked. It also, I believe, invites us to consider what charity is like on the receiving end. Mother Teresa liked to remind us that the poor are entitled to respect, that their dignity is neither less nor different to the dignity of anyone else. She frequently found cause to say similar things because people in necessitous circumstances are often treated as if they are less, as if they are somehow less worthy than others, as if their plight was caused by some inner defect or flaw, as if they were to blame, as if their situation would be resolved if only they became better people. If you have ever received charity, were you respected? Was your dignity preserved and acknowledged in the process? Hold on to those memories. We'll return to them a bit later. This morning, we'll reflect only on the first part of our gospel reading while remembering that it's part of a much larger body of teaching. You know the scene. Jesus is teaching the crowds and the disciples, blessing them, assuring them that he hasn't come to do away with the law and the prophets, but to fulfill, unpacking a few examples of Mosaic law. You have heard that it was said, and I say to you. The last example he gives is a bit tricky. He said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbour and hate your enemy." That's a strange thing for Jesus to say, because nowhere in the law of Moses, indeed nowhere in the whole Old Testament, does it instruct people to hate their enemies. We'll leave that problem aside and continue to our reading today. Beware of practicing your righteousness or justice before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites in the synagogues and streets do, so that they might be praised by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will give back to you. The massive crowds listening to Jesus included all kinds of people. Given the economic circumstances of the times, most of those listening had probably depended on alms at some stage or other, probably repeatedly. And most, if not all of them, had probably given alms to others when they were in a position to so do. Before we explore the teaching we've read today, though, I'd like us to listen back to something that Jesus said a little earlier when he told the crowds, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others so that they might see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." How does that fit, you might ask, with what he said in today's reading? Don't practice your justice before others. When you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms might be done in secret. Some people wonder, how can Jesus say, "Let your light shine," and then say, "Do it all in secret"? Wouldn't that be putting our light under a bushel, which Jesus tells us not to do? Are not Jesus' instructions, "Let your light shine before all and do justice in secret," aren't they contradictory? How can we let our light shine while keeping our justice and mercy work secret? Reverend Joe Capolio grew up and trained as a Baptist minister in Zambia. He reminds us that Jesus is the true light of the world. And so the light we shine, the light we have as Jesus' disciples, it's not our own. It's the light of Christ shining through us as we follow, live in, and remain true to that light, the light of Jesus. So when we are true to our identity and vocation, being the light of the world, we do not turn that light back on ourselves and say, "Look at me, look at me, look at all the justice work that I'm doing." We don't bask in the sunlight or the spotlight. We shine that light away from ourselves, bringing the light of Christ into dark places, revealing what the powers that be do not want anyone to see, illuminating the truth and showing the way to God, lighting the way to Jesus, guiding people to the truth. Let your light shine before others that they might see your just works, that they might see your just works without needing to see who is doing them, that they may see those works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Beware of practicing your righteousness before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets, so that they might be praised for others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward. Jesus clearly understands giving alms, giving people what they need, as an act of justice. Reward, misthos, it's not spiritual or religious language. Misthos is the ordinary term used for wages, for payment, and that's how it's translated in Jesus' parables about work relations and in some other parts of the New Testament. The term translated alms is derived from another word, elios, mercy, compassion, steadfast love. This word elios is how the Greek version of the Old Testament most often translates the Hebrew chesed, steadfast love, or loving faithfulness. So when we keep that background together, we can see that giving alms is an act of justice and mercy that allows God's steadfast love to flow through us as we respond to need with compassion, suffering with, sharing the suffering of those who are in need. Last Sunday, we listened to part of Deuteronomy where Moses urged the people of Israel to open their hearts and their hands to give to those in need and to give generously, recognizing that if they collectively had kept the entire commandment of God, no one would be in need. People are in need because justice has not collectively been done. Giving to meet human need is an act of justice which we should and we must and we delight to practice with humility, not with pride. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who is in secret will give back to you. There is no contradiction between letting our light shine and giving in secret, not letting our left hand know what the right is doing. Both these sayings of Jesus are part of the same teaching. They come almost within minutes of each other. This is consistent with what the ancient rabbis taught, to give secretly. Why? In order to preserve the dignity of those who need your help. To avoid raising the giver about those to whom they give. The teaching wasn't always followed then, and it isn't always followed now. Jesus, like the rabbis before him, took it for granted that those listening did indeed give alms and give to those in need. And when Jesus urged the disciples and the crowds not to sound a trumpet before them, we shouldn't imagine that rich Jews of the day actually did use trumpets to announce their charity, although that practice was followed by certain wealthy Romans whose honour, as they understood it, depended on receiving public acclaim. Jesus urged people to give alms discreetly, even anonymously, not letting the left hand know what the right was doing. Not letting our hands know, not even announcing it to ourselves, lest we be tempted, as Paul would put it, to think more highly of ourselves than we ought. Jesus uses the language of payment, of wages, at verses 1 and 2. Beware of practicing your justice before others in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no wage, no payment from your Father in heaven. Truly I tell you, those who are praised by others have received their wage, their payment. Later on, in verse 4, his language changes from the realm of payment, of wages earned, to the realm of gift. Unfortunately, the English translations disguise this. I don't know why. But the idea is that our Father who sees in secret will give back to us, recognising that everything we have is a gift of God, even life itself. So our acts of justice should not be motivated by the prospect of some kind of reward or payment. They should not be motivated by self-interest. When we give naturally, as an expression of our love of God and of neighbour, we allow God's steadfast love to flow through us. Discipleship, following Jesus, isn't a calculating process. We give, we serve, without counting the cost and without calculating possible eternal rewards. Humble, secret giving is important, I believe, for recipients as well as for givers. I invited you earlier to remember those times when you have been on the receiving end of charity. I'd like to share you a story now about the damage done when charity is announced. Some years back, I met an absolutely fabulous bunch of people while I was teaching a 2-week intensive on aid and development at Worldview Centre for Intercultural Studies in Launceston. The participants facilitated morning, noon, or evening devotions in turn. We had 3 devotions a day so that everybody could get their turn in 2 weeks. David, not his real name, grew up in a farming community in rural Australia. He's a bit older than I am, maybe about 10 years older. His father died when he was quite young, probably late primary or early high school, he didn't specify. As David remembers it, there was little government support for widows and their families then, unless the father had served with the public service or the military, which his father hadn't. So his mother had no choice but to find work, which she did. But women's wages were low. She couldn't earn enough to cover rent and feed and clothe the family. She grew increasingly desperate, and in her distress, she asked the church to help, which they did. But overnight, David's friends stopped playing with him and started being kind to him. Instead of invitations to Sunday dinner or to play during the week, church families sent around packages of food, hand-me-down clothes, firewood, stuff like that. The children who delivered these packages were polite enough, but they would never stay to play. It was as if they were afraid of catching poverty, as if being orphaned were somehow contagious. David and his brothers and sisters, and there were many of them, dreaded church anniversaries and picnics. They, with their mother, were expected to line up and thank the church for the assistance received during the year. They hated it, and when they begged their mother not to make them go, she would tell them, "Yes, it's awful. It's awful for you and it's awful for me, but your father's gone, you are too young to work, I can't feed and house us all, we need help, we have to do this to get this help. Like it or not, we will all go, like it or not, we all will look and sound grateful, we will tell those who are helping us what they want to hear." As soon as they were old enough, David said, he and his siblings found work. As soon as they could, they left the church and the community that had humiliated them so badly. And David himself refused to set foot in a church for years and years. He wanted nothing to do with God if God's people treated those in need like that. Yes, they were grateful that they hadn't starved, that they were fed, that they kept a roof over their heads. But it could have been done differently. David did rediscover his faith and come back to God, but it took decades. It needn't have. I could tell you other stories, damage done by those who want to give and mean well, but don't understand the culture and context in which they're intervening. I could tell you other stories, local and international, about justice done well, humbly, discreetly, respecting those in need and honouring their dignity, resilience and own agency. I know that you can tell those stories too, good stories, from the work of Link and from elsewhere. I've heard some of those stories and I'd love to hear more. I could also tell you about when I've been on the receiving end without being humiliated. But these are all stories for another day. This morning, let's close by reflecting on doing justice well, including, but not limited to, giving to those in need. When we do justice well, we do it naturally, recognizing that it's part of our disciples, what we just do as a matter of course. We do it discreetly, respectfully, preserving the dignity of those in need. No strings attached, not putting the recipient under any kind of obligation to us. We respond with compassion. We suffer with those who are suffering. We should not condescend as if we were stooping down to them. God condescends, but we are all equal. And so I love it that most Sundays we quietly collect food for Link. Nobody knows who gives what. We don't keep count of what we give ourselves. The people, the families whom Link assists don't know exactly who gave that food or other goods. They know it comes from churches. But there's an intentional dignity-preserving anonymity there between those who contribute and those who currently have no choice but to receive. Within Baptist churches, our tithes, our contribution to this community are also anonymous. We know the total in our budget, it's reported, but we don't know who gives what or how much. That's important. When we gave flood relief through the Baptist Union of Victoria, that also was anonymous so that those receiving did not feel under any obligation. Prison fellowships, angel gifts are the same. Yes, they come from churches, but the letter, the card, comes from the person, the parent in prison. So we give discreetly, respectfully, and we give humbly, without self-congratulations, without self-interest or thought of reward, not letting our left hand know what our right hand is doing. We give gratefully, remembering that all good things come from God, thankful that we have the opportunity to share God's love, and we give joyfully, knowing that we give in the presence of God, that God sees, that justice with humility, mercy with humility pleases God. God sees what we're doing and rejoices. We're always in the presence of God. Some people find that difficult if they think of God forever waiting to pounce on us when we take a misstep and do something wrong. But I don't think that's what God's like. I like to imagine God delighting as we learn new things, discover more of God's beautiful world. And I think of God cheering us on when we stumble, but then get back up again and try again. And I imagine God smiling broadly and laughing even when we show kindness and do justice in secret without any thought of reward. It's a bit colloquial, but I think of God saying, "Huh, that's my boy, that's my girl," when we're living God's way. Let's pray. Creator God, the earth and everything in it belongs to you. The world and all who dwell therein are yours. May your love encourage us. May your spirit lead and guide us. May we do nothing from selfishness or conceit, but in humility count others better than ourselves. May we look not to our own interests, but consider first the interest of others. May we have the mind of Christ, who being in very nature God, did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but emptying himself, taking the form of a slave, and being born in human likeness, humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even death on a cross. Lord Jesus, help us to do justice work humbly, secretly, that your light, the light of Christ, might shine to the glory of God, Father, Son, and Spirit. Amen.